Well, Merrill DeBrow, thank you very much, sir, for joining me today for the Happy Market Research podcast. You are a busy guy, a CEO, as I know firsthand, is time is valuable. But having said that, you also spend a lot of time after hours on university boards. You've served as the president of the AMA Boston. You've had a blog for a decade. Additionally, you know, you and Steve Schlesinger put on a CEO summit. That's a major lift for you guys. As a leader of CEOs, what is the number one skill that you think CEOs bring to the table?
Wow. Well, first of all, before I answer the question, Jamin, I want to thank you and Alexandra for inviting me to the podcast. I'm really looking forward to being part of it. And what you're doing here is really unique and I think beneficial to the entire research community. You know, to answer your question, I don't know if I can give you one answer. I don't know if I could sit there and tell you what's the number one skill that every C-level employee could or should bring to the table. I think that's really depends on the CEO, but I can answer it from my standpoint, which is you've got to be self-aware and you've got to be able to allow yourself to have a self-evaluation and trust people around you. So, you know, constantly when you have, I believe I'm never going to be the smartest guy in the room. I believe I've made the most of my skill set. And the reality is I can say, hey, I need to get better at blank. So the interesting thing, you mentioned my blog for 10 years, which I did 3 times a week, and I wrote every one except for a few guest writers. I'm not a great writer. I have good ideas, but I don't have great punctuation or grammar. And I was able to, through this self-aware and self-evaluation, understand that, know that, and surround myself with people who could help me through that. They didn't rewrite the stuff. They just made sure it made sense. So for me, the number one skill is the self-awareness. Give yourself the self-evaluation to know that, hey, I might not be great at finances, or I might not be great at management, or I might not be great at sales, or I may not be great at, you know, something else. And being able to surround yourself with the right people and also try to get better at something every day. So for me, it's what I'll call, Jamin, 900 seconds, 15 minutes a day. I try to get better at something, whether that's be a better marketer, be a better executive, be a better son, you know, be a better brother. It doesn't really matter. That's what I would say for me, for where my career is right now. I would say to have that self-evaluation and be self-aware of what my strengths are, but more important, what my weaknesses are, and do something about it.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're doing two things there. One is you're hiring people to support the blind spots and or weaknesses.
Right.
And the other part is you're leaning into those in terms of intentional training. Do you think you spend, using your rule, do you think you spend more time on, you know, improving your strengths or bolstering your weaknesses?
Yeah, you know, and there's a lot of books on that. I actually try to improve my weaknesses. So I'll go after some things that I might have some blind spots to try to improve. And the, you know, and look, I remember, and you've seen me on stage a fair amount. The first time I presented, which was in Nashville, Tennessee at Opryland Hotel, I did it. This will show everybody who's listening how old I am. I did it on index cards, and I was visibly shaking, and my voice cracked when I presented, and that was the first time. So in my 20s, in my early 20s, I did that and knew that being a good communicator and trying to get your message across to attendees and colleagues and bosses was going to be important in my career. So I really worked hard at that over the years. And I think I've done a good job and probably am a above average presenter at this point, still trying to get better. But I go after my weaknesses. I go after the stuff that I know I need to improve. I think it's helped me so far.
Yeah, I think this idea that greatness is born, not made, is complete bullshit. And it demeans the people that are successful and the value that we've built in our own lives by intentionally focusing on, I don't know if you read the blog post that I did on the subject of procrastination, but I actually talk about one of the times that I completely failed as a speaker. And for me, that was a big opportunity to just focus on any time I can speak, I take advantage of that. No matter, even if I'm out of pocket, right? I'll drive or fly if I have the opportunity to, because I want to improve on that particular thing. And now people see me on stage and they're like, he's okay. He's pretty good, whatever. The point is that it's something that I continue to work on and a craft that I continue to hone. So I think that's just such an important point. You got to focus on those weaknesses and improve them if it's something that is important to you.
Totally agree.
So what in market research is adding the most value right now to businesses?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. You know, we've all been in sales meetings, we've all had client visits, capabilities presentations, and we've looked over the corner and there's some beautiful bound research reports that are collecting dust. Mm-hmm. And have never been used and have never been implemented, integrated within the enterprise. The most, where market research is really adding the most value right now is a true partnership, not a vendor-client relationship, a true partnership where you can ask all the hard questions, you can deliver insight. And what we try to teach our team is, what are they doing with the research? How can we help integrate that within their enterprise? Are we going to get chances to talk to the brand manager? Do we have C-level interaction? Is the CMO going to be involved? What about the VP of marketing? Where does this report go after we deliver it to you? Who's in the room on the final presentation? So for us, whether it's a tracking piece of business, whether it's a quick study that we do concept testing that's in and out, we try to ask those other questions because we want to make sure that any research we deliver, Jamin, doesn't just collect dust. We want it to be used. Clients are spending a lot of money on these tools and on these management reports. And from our standpoint, the companies that really are adding the most, where research is adding the most value, use the research. Mm. And it's a funny bit, but not all clients do that. There's a lot of client turnover and a lot of stuff just gets lost in the shuffle. So I think that's really where the most value is today, right now.
I remember this is a true story. I did a qualitative study for a client who will be unnamed and delivered the report. And it was just this really tight 2-page executive summary. Took me 3 months of, flying around the world doing the qualitative. And I handed it to him. He looked at me and said, and dropped it on the table and said, it's too light.
Right.
True story. So I had to then pull an inch worth of content. By inch, I mean in terms of number of pages, and then it was adequate. So it's a completely different measurement than today.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's funny.
Hey, listen, you do a lot of work with young professionals. What do you look for when you're going to hire someone who's starting out, and what skills do you think they should be focusing on developing?
Yeah, so it's funny because everybody has this lunch test. Do I want to have lunch with the person across from me? Mm-hmm. And if I do, then maybe I'll hire him. And if I don't, get him out of here quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, one of the things I look for is a thirst for knowledge, right? And if you have a thirst for knowledge, you will ask questions and you'll listen to the answers and hopefully you'll be able to process that. And hopefully you'll be able to really think about it, what it means to you and your job. You know, I like to surround myself once we've hired people. I don't want people to do their job.
Mm-hmm.
That's what everybody wants. I want people to think about doing their job. So I want those extra two words at the beginning of the sentence to really apply. Because let's think about it for a second, Shaman. If you think about doing your job, what happens, right? Chances are you do a better job, you gain efficiencies. Chances are you'll have a little bit more fun. Chances are you'll deliver a better product. Chances are you'll make everybody around you look a little bit better. And everything is a win-win, right? But too many people don't. The other question I have to answer, and mine isn't about can I have lunch with this person, although I love to have lunch, is are they trainable? Because no matter who comes into your enterprise, you have to train them. You may want to tell me you only have to train them for 3 weeks as opposed to 3 months or 2 years, but you have to train them. And if they think they know everything and they're not trainable, then it's a no-go for me. And recently, in the last 90 days or so, we've really, when you make a bad hire, it costs you a lot. Yes, it, if you hire somebody for $100,000 and you hire them for you know, upwards of 6 months, well, now you wasted $50,000 plus benefits of 20%, so now it's $60,000 plus expenses, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it's also the cost of doing business and the opportunity cost. So the reality is we use something called the AccuMax Index, which tests, which is a quick survey. It takes about 3 minutes to do it. And basically, it's a tool that tells you how people are wired and the environment that they work well within, how they communicate, and how they like to be integrated within a company. And it's been a lifesaver. Everybody in the company has taken it. Everybody we interview has taken it. Anybody we hire in the last 3 or 4 months has taken it. We've used it with clients of ours to pick teams based on communication styles, because as we know, all clients are a little bit different. And it's been an unbelievable tool. Now, there's about 250 of these tools in the country. This is one of the few that has wiring as part of the metric and the algorithm. And it's really worked well for us. And it's unbelievable. It's already saved us a lot of money.
When you guys are hiring, you think about the, you know, hiring is a lot like a sales funnel, right? So you've got a vast number of people, hopefully, that are applying for a job, and it kind of whittles down to those that have good resumes, et cetera.
When you, sure.
What would you recommend? What are the key tools, or what do you look for in that top of the funnel to help somebody get from an expressed interest into the job to actually get that interview?
Yeah, I think, look, for me, it's a little bit about networking.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm a big proponent, as you know, about LinkedIn. To me, it's the number one management tool out there that, oh, by the way, it's free pretty much in the world. Like, I don't know how most people are doing their jobs without utilizing LinkedIn. Now, just level set, I do use it a ton. I have almost 26,000 connections. So I think that for me and the people that we've hired, they've wrote a compelling, quick email. Or they've referenced something in our business, or they've referenced somebody in my inner circle, or they come highly recommended. That'll get my attention. That doesn't mean it's the sole purpose and the sole way you get my attention. But if you're right, I mean, if I have 100 resumes that are coming in blind, it may only get five that get, but if I get 10 resumes from Jamin or Steve Schlesinger, all 10 will be reviewed, all 10 will be talked about, and all 10 will be interviewed. Because I know that if you're calling me or sending me an email or suggesting through a text that I need to interview Freddie or Sally, I know you're thinking about the best interest of my company, and I'm going to do that. That means you've seen something, and that means a great deal to me. So that really is the number one thing.
Got it. Networking, critical.
Yeah, it's critical. Plus, you know, having access to people like you and Tim Armstrong and Kathy Allen from Decision, you know, Steve Schlesinger, you know, all these executives who run companies who are all in different parts of the United States, who come from different backgrounds, who come across different resumes and different potential candidates, it really is another set or two or five or 10 of eyes that really can help you move your business forward.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. So when you started your career, of course, you were not a CEO of a major market research company. You entered the front door just like everybody else. And now as you reflect back over that time, what is the biggest lesson that you learned?
Well, I got to tell you something. Being as old as me and being in the industry for 33, 34 years, there's a lot of lessons. But I would say the biggest one is profits cover up problems.
Hmm.
And, you know, not too many years ago, we were flying high, couldn't do anything wrong. It was unbelievable hitting. You know, every month was a new record, whether it was revenue or profit, didn't matter. And, you know, I could sense that there were some things that were a little bit awry. But when everything's going great, I didn't react to a few things that I should have because they were covered up by profits.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been the biggest learning for me that'll never happen again. And it's something that I think has been extremely valuable. So when things are going great, continue to make the strategy moves. When things are going great, continue to look at all your metrics. When things are going great, continue to improve on every single one of them and continue to look for those efficiencies and don't get complacent at all. So that's what I would say.
There's a lot of narrative around what is the role of market research in today's world. Seems like it's been evolving, and maybe even displaced by some of the integration of marketing what would be marketing research technologies inside of like WordPress websites or what have you. What do you see as the biggest miss in the market research industry over the last 5 years?
You know, Jamin, have your kids ever played or your niece or nephew ever played soccer, right?
Of course.
As a 7 or 8, 9 year old, right? So the ball goes to the left and what happens?
Everybody goes to the left.
Right. And then the ball kicks across the field and it goes to the right. And then what happens?
Same thing. Everybody follows the ball.
So I just described to you the market research industry.
Mm.
And the problem is that sentiment analysis, everybody go. Biometrics, go. Eye tracking, go. Big data, go. What's next? Artificial intelligence? Yeah. And the problem is that everybody gravitates, every single company out there gravitates to the next biggest thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a huge miss for a lot of companies. And what I mean by that is you got to have the right technology for your company, for your staff, and for your clients. And oh, by the way, you got to make money at it. And if you can't, don't go after that piece of technology. I'm not saying don't take technology and integrate it in your enterprise. I'm saying take the right technology that makes the most sense for your company. Don't chase everything. Because if you chase everything, it's going to be costly. You're not going to understand what the deliverable is. You're not going to be a guru in one thing. And it's going to cost you money, I guarantee it.
The lack of focus, big problem.
I think so.
Yeah, good. So kind of looking forward now, what are you seeing as the major change, kind of continuing your analogy of the grammar school soccer team, right?
Yeah.
Where's the, to Wayne Gretzky now, right? Which is his famous quote, I think, is, I don't go to where the puck is, I go to where it's going.
Yep.
Where is the puck going?
Well, I think the companies that are going to have the most success are the companies that build products and services that are very quick, that are probably have some type of automated or do-it-yourself platform that clients can react to quickly. What we as researchers probably all don't understand or want to understand is that our clients are getting asked from the CMO or VP of marketing or brands, I need an answer to this problem now. And now means yesterday. We don't have the luxury anymore of 6 months or 8 months or 9 months. It's now. And the products and services that can meet those challenges, and I think there's a lot out there, but not as many as there could or should be, are really where the future is going to be. And I think that my sense is that corporate departments are going to continue. I don't see them growing a ton. I think some will, but I think a lot of them are going to continue to streamline as they work through these product mix that's going to be quicker delivery and be able to allow them to really move their business forward. So I think that's what's going to happen as well.
So kind of piggybacking on that, Are there specific products that Mark is pushing to help meet that demand?
Yeah, I think, yes. We introduced a new product on the Zappy platform about 17 months ago. Actually, Monday was our 17th month anniversary.
Congratulations.
And thank you. And we had our first client on day 5 after we established the product and went live with the service. So we had our first client day 5. I think we had 3 clients in the first 3 weeks. We had almost We had a little shy of 100,000 revenue in the first month. So, and we've been on our way since. So I think for us, it's continuing to build some additional do-it-yourself automated platforms that clients can really benefit from quickly, that are priced reasonably, then that allow clients to get the insight that they need in their enterprise to move it forward right away. So we've got a couple more coming out in the next couple of months. So be on the lookout for them. And I think that, you know, back in the day, Jamin, we would all build products and not have a revenue stream for what, maybe 8 months, a year, you know? You can't do that anymore. I don't have time. You don't have time. We need to have revenue streams pretty quickly.
So are you building out technology internally, or are you leveraging other providers to build out the tech?
Most of it is externally. Mm-hmm. We've done some with Zappy. We had a very successful hackathon mm-hmm. that we were able to figure out a way, which was very, very interesting, because we did about 7 or 8 months of work in 6 days. We went to the middle of nowhere in Texas, and 21 people, 14 from them and 7 from us, from I think, I don't know, 12 different countries, got together really 9 miles past the middle of nowhere in Texas, where internet didn't really work and the phones didn't work half the time. And we built a product, and we're able to do that. Mm-hmm. So some is internal, a lot of it is external, and it's making sure that we're picking the right partners to move our business forward.
Awesome. That's all my questions, Merrill. Is there anything else you wanted to cover?
No, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. This has been great. Hopefully the answers will help some folks. And I appreciate you having me as a guest today. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right, Merrill. Thank you very much. And thank you, everyone who's listening. We hope you have a fantastic day. Bye-bye.